netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Thanks for taking the time to download our podcast today. I'm John Montgomery. Now, over the years at FX Guide, we've covered a ton of different aspects of the industry, from blockbuster feature film visual effects, to TV commercials, to motion graphics design, to the labor issues that are facing the visual effects industry today. But I don't think we've covered our topic today, and that's doing graphics for the medical and pharmaceutical industry. Mike Seymour is going to be speaking with Casey Steffen, founder of Steffen VFX in Brooklyn, New York, where he does animations for the pharmaceutical industry, medical industry, and even the entertainment industry from things like National Geographic Channel. Now, I find this actually quite interesting because I spent time in Grand Rapids, Michigan before I moved to Chicago, and we did a ton of animations for the medical firm Upjohn, which was located nearby. And it's really an interesting process. You've got to pay attention to scientific and medical accuracy. You've got to pay attention to legal issues. You can't do things necessarily that are technically wrong, because that would bring out every lawyer that's hiding in the bushes. And then, of course, you've got the creative aspects and the storytelling aspects of things. And sometimes these things can be really contradictory in getting the work done. So I really enjoyed this interview Mike had with Casey about the work that they do. So let's go ahead and join that interview now. This is Mike Seymour speaking with Casey Steffen of Steffen VFX.
And I'm joined on the line now by Casey. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Good. So now, tell me, this is a really interesting area of the craft, certainly that I haven't had a lot of exposure to. Let me just start right out of the gate in saying that I've got some assumptions coming to this side of the business, which is that accuracy plays a much more important role than it does for people like us when we're just doing, you know, sort of gratuitous TVCs or whatever. Am I right? Is there a...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We have we work with teams of scientists that review the stories that we're telling, the characters that we're developing. So we're working in tandem with, you know, the scientific community as we're developing these animations. So accuracy is by far, one of the most important things to us. You know, we're really trying to educate, the scientific community in general. So, you know, we're speaking to really educated individuals.
And yet what they're after is something that's going to be, you know, still able to communicate a point or a story or a message. So there needs to be an artistic element to it. So you must be constantly balancing, well, yeah, I could do this, but that would be really dull. Or we could, you know, put some backlight in there, even though there's no reason why there should be backlight, and away we go. I mean, are the people that you're dealing with, by their nature, analytical and less keen on the visual, or is it they just love seeing their stuff come to life?
You know, it's really it's different depending on who you're working with. If you're talking about working with product managers, people that are really invested in the actual devices and, you know, sales and marketing campaigns, they're not always the most artistic people, and they don't get as excited about that stuff. But working with scientists, on the other hand, you know, they love it. They just adore seeing the things that are really important to them come to life and visualized, oftentimes in ways that they've never even, been able to imagine before. So the creativity side of it is also kind of a fun part of it, because there's a whole lot of room within the realm of, okay, well, accuracy, we're really focused on that, but there's a lot of stuff that nobody knows. And in that regards, I always first try to be as accurate as possible. But then when there's that realm of, well, we're not really sure how that might operate, or how it might move, or what characteristics it might have over, you know, a span of 30 seconds, let's say, that's where artistic freedom comes into play, and imagination really, is allowed to, you know, enter into these stories, and for artists to begin to utilize their own voice and their own ideas, but still adhering to the messages that we're communicating.
So now, this is not exactly in the same field, but I remember a story about the scientists and paleontologists on Jurassic Park, and the animators working out how one of the characters would run. And actually, the scientists actually learned from that, because, of course, the animator, well, no, sort of expert in dinosaurs, had a very good understanding of how weight distribution would have to work for a biped. And so actually it was a two-way street in that they actually started getting really excited because they never had these kind of tools to visualize stuff before. And once they saw it themselves, they started learning. Do you ever get a situation where you're in that you're visualizing stuff and scientists are actually going, oh, really? You know, kind of like, because they obviously don't have the skills to be able to visualize at the level you do.
Yeah, it's really fun when that happens too, because you know, it's all of a sudden, you know, as a, you know, just a medical illustrator, I'm excited by the prospect of being able to ask those questions of people, and if there's not an answer, well, let's play pretend and let's try to figure it out. Because, you know, in the types of stories that I tell, they're largely, you know, at a molecular level where, you know, nobody has, you know, we've never seen those that type of scale with our eyes. And so you know, we've had charts or, you know, equations that have represented these proteins and molecules before, but never have we ever been able to really look at them as three-dimensional objects and begin asking questions about, well, if that's this size and it has to be in this position, what's going on around it? And when you begin asking those questions, that's where you enter into that world of, well, we're not really quite certain. Let's figure that out. You know, I was working on a story about HIV one time, and there's two receptors that are largely responsible for the virus binding to a T cell, which is a white blood cell. Mm-hmm. It's an immune system cell. And it's the CD4 and the CCR5 co-receptor. Now, being you know, very keen on molecular data and utilizing that in the stories I tell, I was able to figure out, you know, where are the active sites in these proteins? How would this virus, you know, the protein involved with binding change shape? And, you know, I was able to problem solve a little bit, but then I was like, well, what's the relationship of these two receptors to each other on a cell membrane? And, you know, asking those questions is interesting because people, you know, they're like, well, I know this is all tied together and there's very, you know, there's a step-by-step process that this virus goes through in order to get into the cell. But we've never really, you know, like looked at these two proteins together next to each other. And as I was playing around with it, you know, I was looking at them. I was like, well, all of a sudden, this kind of reminded me of Africa. And this protein over here kind of reminds me of South America. And as I was looking at the shell structures, hydrophobic and hydrophilic states, everything started lining up. And I began wondering if maybe these two proteins don't somehow fit together. So asking that kind of question, you know, I didn't really ever find a good answer for it. And I'm still very curious to discover it. So, but yeah, we, you know, every once in a while we get lucky and we stumble onto something like that. I would love to talk to the animator that actually was working with those scientists. I'm sure that's a really great story.
So now there's some stuff. Let's say you're doing some kind of molecular or you know, medical thing like a viral invasion. There's some obvious hardcore facts, like, you know, the way that it's going to work is. But there's one area that has no factual basis whatsoever, and it's color. At least I assume that's the case. I assume that they don't come to you and say these molecules are this color. So your work actually is very vivid and very interesting. Is that ever a point of contention, or is that something that you really focus on? I mean, how does that play in? Because some of your stuff is just gorgeous, and I'm thinking, well, this has to all be you.
A lot of that's – yeah, absolutely. That is me. It's creativity. It's just – it's knowing what visual problems we have to solve in order to communicate a message, you know, adhering to whatever we need to in order to get there, but then finding the room for expression and visual interest. And because that's really part of storytelling and about capturing your audience. And you really need to, you know, present them with something that they're engaged by in order to kind of tell these complicated stories. So, I try to utilize it like aesthetic as a tool in that way. But it's, once again, it's one of those freedoms that, you know, there's a lot of play in that realm because there's a lot of modalities for visualization. You know, there's, you know, different microscopy, types of visualization or, you know, SEM, everybody's seen those black and white, images that are really beautiful of, you know, what a cell surface might look like. And, you know, I think I maybe try to draw from the way that scientists and people are comfortable at looking at that type of a you know, structure or environment, and start from there and try to build on that. Something that they're familiar with is usually what I try to stick to and begin with.
So let's just step back for a second and talk about how you got to here. Because I don't want to imply that you've only done molecules. In fact, I think you started, in the gaming industry in the late 90s, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. I started out working with Presto Studios. Now, Presto was big into adventure games back in the day, back before real-time video games even kind of hit. I remember being on my first Mac playing Myst. Maybe you probably remember that game.
I do.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
Personally, I found it really frustrating, but that's...
Yeah, it was frustrating. But it was also a game that really, to me opened up a lot of, possibilities. You know, I looked at it as a brand new medium and a brand new art form, and it really got me excited about computers and about... trying to be creative in this new way. And it was, I went through undergraduate as a, liberal arts major and focused on, painting and sculpture. But I ended up getting an internship with Presto Studios. And that was really where I got my start with 3D. And I was really lucky to have gotten into a place like that. It was a really wonderful studio with some really talented people. And it really established what my own standards of, craft, I think, would be for the years to come.
And this is all on the East Coast, because you come.
No, actually, that was San Diego. I was out in San Diego, yeah, back then, and then I've kind of been zigzagging my way across the country to Brooklyn finally.
And so, how did you get from games to sort of medical storytelling?
Well, I worked in the game industry for about 4 years, and. It was great. I really enjoyed it. But it was also during the time that things like Grand Theft Auto were coming out and real-time video games had started to sort of take hold. And after I got to work on Myst 3, the third series in the game, Presto Studios ended up getting that contract. And after that game finished, they started doing other types of video games, and my interest kind of began to move away from, combat-oriented video games and real-time things. And, I wanted to go back to school, and I wanted to have a more refined education. But I didn't want to leave 3D animation. I wanted to find a way to bring the two together. And after doing a lot of research on different types of, industries out there that might utilize animation, I found medical illustration, which had just begun using 3D animation to tell what are called mechanism of action stories, which are largely how the body operates and how therapies and intervention might correct the healthcare aspect of medicine.
Right.
Once I found that, I was like, well, this is possibly a really good fit, and ended up moving to Chicago to go to the University of Illinois. At Chicago, and got a Master's of Science in Biomedical Visualization. And it was after that I, started working as a medical illustrator, and I've been doing that for the last 6 years now. And that eventually brought me out to the East Coast doing some, TV stuff for the Discovery Channel, and then, working within the pharmaceutical and biotech industries, doing their, medical education for, doctors and scientists and healthcare professionals.
But you've also done stuff just outside this, right? Because I'm sure you've worked on some TVC work.
Yeah, I did. We recently, we worked on a National Geographic Channel show, Finding the Origins of Life. And it was, my own company, Stefan VFX, our first real, endeavor and success. And that was over the summer of 2009. And it was all about, the origins of life and where does life, what are the chemical and environmental conditions that would be required in order for life to organize on primordial Earth. So it was a story that fit very well with my own background. And so I was just really pleased to be able to kind of share molecular animation with, a National Geographic audience.
So I've seen some of the work you've done. There's some really great examples on your website. But there's some really interesting stuff. For example, there's a great Discovery Channel volumetric simulation. And I'm wondering, what is your primary workflow for doing this? Obviously 3D, but just walk me through how that project comes through?
Yeah, that was a cool little experiment. And it was largely that. Now that's it's all simulated by me, and it's not actual data sets. There are actual ways to create volumetric reconstructions based off of MRIs and CAT scans and things like that, which is just serialized data stacked on top of each other. And you can think of an image that's been extruded by 1 millimeter, and that's essentially how they combine together a CAT scan to recreate tissue. Well, I kind of took that and kind of ran with it and created a sort of cellular, CAT scan, so to speak, where I, fabricated little procedural 3D textures that represented cells and had nucleuses and then essentially created an animation that kind of my own MRI, essentially, where I rendered out this cube extruding through space, and every frame, the extrude advanced a millimeter, and I rendered out a new frame, and then brought that data into a volumetric reconstruction program, and that's how we ended up with that animation.
So just walk that last bit, the volumetric reconstruction program, was that?
It was a while ago. I'd have to look it up for you, Mike.
I guess I'm just curious as to what kind of tools. How much is the workflow to do this stuff? Just you with sort of standard effects products, and how much of this is either custom code or specialist products that you've brought in?
Everything is pretty much off the shelf. Anybody out there could be making.
That's kind of generous of you for the rest of us. That I don't think it's just anyone could do it. This is a pretty complicated stuff, and
Yeah, the cellular aspect of it, where I was actually creating the textures, that was with Darktree, which is a legacy 3D procedural program that's, I think on the way of the dodo at this point. And that was actually, I used that with 3D Studio Max back in the time, and then from there just rendered it out and combined it together in the volumetric reconstruction program.
Right, and so. Let me just ask about your delivery, because it's not an immediately obvious thing. I mean, how are these being primarily used? Are they obviously if it's for Discovery Channel, that goes to air, but mm-hmm. you must be doing stuff that is also used in other places, be it educational conferences or just online.
Right. It's a lot of online. Within the world of pharmaceuticals and biotech, everything is really transforming over into e-based services, where it's they're posting videos and interactive medias online, or as some sort of mobile device, or there's a lot of different types of distribution these days. It's wherever you can put video, that's what they're trying to get it everywhere these days. But there's also book publishing. There's a lot of interactive media that gets created for books as well. Just the standard college textbook. They've got stories to tell, and 3D animation is a wonderful tool for communicating information.
So without being kind of too cutthroat, I'm just curious as to the business side of this. I'm not trying to probe into your financials or anything, but I'm just wondering how difficult it is to get work, and also once you've established, is it like a huge barrier to entry that I would have no idea what some of these things were, and so just the education of the animator is a barrier to just anybody doing it? I mean, how does it work?
It's a good question, and to be honest, I'm figuring out the answer to that myself these days. The way that it's worked for me so far, and I've been on my own with my business for about a year and a half now. The first year was doing subcontract work for medical education agencies, and as well with doing the Nat Geo thing. But the agencies are the people that land the jobs. They're large companies that have multi-departments of scientists and graphics people and whatever. And they're the people that have this infrastructure in place to communicate with the pharmaceutical industry. Now, that's not to say that there isn't the availability and the opening to, as a small studio or even as a larger studio, to get access into this type of media. But it's difficult in light of the economy right now, because while the pharmaceutical industry, I'm sure, would love to find a way to save money on these types of jobs, they're also very concerned with, you know, ensuring return on investment. And for them, that equates to a company that's, you know, of comparable size, something that very large that they have assurances in and can wrap larger media packages together with, so that when, you know, they are going to go to somebody to do their campaign, they can go to one person, one agency, and have the entire campaign fulfilled. So for right now, the way that, you know, I kind of look at the market, it's really, you know, for me, it comes in as a, I come in to facilitate that 3D animation for these agencies. People that don't have internal departments, people that don't want to carry the overhead of a 3D animation company, you know, they can turn to, you know, smaller studios such as myself to, you know, handle that aspect of this, you know, because it really is just one piece of a much larger campaign that's being developed. So it's not, you know, when a company is, you know, when, you know, a pharmaceutical company has a new product coming out, their animation isn't their number one thing that they're going for.
No, I realize that, but even in that, inside that agency, like if you just called up and said, well, I want a, you know, a Mayer animator, and somebody comes in and you say, right, so we need to get these DNA strands and blah, 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 and somebody's sort of blankly looking at you like, what? And, you know, there must be such a wealth of, as there is in many industries, but of course for most of us this one's a bit of an unread book, a wealth of sort of technical knowledge that just is the sort of stepping stone that you need to get through before you're actually in a position to sit down and do any real work.
Yeah, it's really true. You know, there people that are doing medical animations today, you know, they really need teams of people. They need scientists to be able to explain to artists how these things work, what DNA looks like. But there's also, you know, people that have specialized maybe in medicine, like I have, people that are medical illustrators, really are that fusion of artist and scientist, and are able to really consume that information and then create, illustrations and media or animations that, you know, can effectively tell that story. But, you know, outside of that, it's really kind of, you know, you really need that joint union of a scientist and an artist in order to do this kind of stuff. So, it takes, you know, for some people it requires a very large company. For other places, they're able to really accomplish it with two or three people that, you know, really know what they're doing.
And so on a typical project, is it, because obviously it's very hard to tell from your website, though it's great, your website, but I mean, how long is like a project? Is it that you're normally doing some like short little piece that's going to be the visual punchline of a couple of seconds, or do these become much, much bigger projects with...
Yeah, they're much bigger. They're, you know, we really exist somewhere between commercial production and television effects production, where our animations are generally 2 to 5 minutes in length.
Wow.
You know, so we're outputting a whole lot of frames. And because you really, I mean, you need more than a minute. I mean, if you think about it, how can I tell a story about science in 30 seconds? Or, you know, it's difficult, and it's got to be a short story if it is. And that's rarely the case with you know, pharmaceutical animation. You know, they're very complicated chemical pathways that you need to represent, and so you need time in order to do it. So, you know, scope is usually exists between 2 and 5 minutes. Anything more than 5 minutes is, you know, a project that is, you know, is going to be a very big deal. The length of time, it's about a minute a month is kind of the going rate of production. And that's a pretty, you know, you're busy for an entire month to get a minute of animation done. Keyframes are very far apart. That's how we do it.
And now let me ask you this. Is this an area that is steeped in security issues, or is this more like because I'm just wondering, because you get a sort of a view that if a drug company is trying to bring a new drug to the market, that's a secret process. But a lot of this stuff is actually the exact opposite, in the sense they're trying to educate and trying to get the word out. Are you dealing with security, or is this not an issue at all?
Well, for me, you know, even on my website, I don't ever show work that I've done for, you know, clients that are within the biotech or scientific community. It's just, I don't feel comfortable, you know, having that stuff in for public eyes. So everything from, you know, on the website right now is based upon the work we did for the National Geographic Channel and my own personal, creative endeavors. So yeah, I mean, it is a you know, very important that we maintain privacy and, you know, any client's, information. But, you know, on the other end, when you talk about like you're trying to communicate with people, absolutely, you're trying to get the word out about products and things like that. But, I don't really do a whole lot of product promotion that's directed towards the general public. It's more directed continuing education of doctors. So as new products come out, well, how does this new, diabetes drug work, and what pathways along, this chemical cascade is it operating on? And sometimes it's information that those doctors probably already understand and know. Sometimes it's for maybe healthcare professionals, nurses, or physicians' assistants that don't really quite have that same breadth of information.
Because I was just fishing with that question, because I guess it sounds to me like what you've got is a very traditional client, relationship where obviously you keep their work confidential, even if they're intending to stick it on a sort of network television to broadcast the message.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. So there's, having worked in this industry for about 4 years now, I've got a whole lot of animations that I've done, but that's not really, it's not many things that I can share, but, it is. And especially being, on my own now, I'm very sensitive to privacy and security and things like that, because, I don't have the backing of a much larger company and lawyers and things like that. So I try to always dot my I's and cross my T's.
And I guess you've just got what sort of setup have you got in your office in computer-wise? Is it, do you have a small farm for this rendering, or do you...
I actually, your class on background fundamentals last term was, I got just an amazing amount of information out of that class. And one of the things that I had done, you had actually talked about, which was partnerships and being able to, find successes by partnering with people. Well, with the National Geographic Channel show, I found myself in a situation where I've got HD footage that I got to produce, and, I don't have a farm. And I was like, I'll rent, a service and, deal with it that way. And I was doing the numbers on it. I was like, all of a sudden, that's out of scope for, production. And I need to try to find a less expensive solution. And I kind of got on the phone with some guys I know in Connecticut. It's a company called Data Hall, and they do hardware rentals for, showrooms and big conferences and things like that, where you've got an enormous screen and you need a really intense computer to be able to show that video. And I was just calling up my friend Anthony. I was like, Anthony, do you know anybody that has a render farm that might be willing to, rent it to me for a little bit? And he's like, well, you need a render farm, huh? I was like, yeah. Well, he's like, well, let's just string something together for you, and you buy the software and and we'll rent it to you for a low cost. And because they've got this inventory that they'd like to make money on, those are their machines, and they just kind of sit around in their store and just waiting to be used. And I was like, well, I'd like to use them. So they set me up a render farm, and I've got my own little kind of render garden out in Connecticut that I, that are remote into. And it's perfect. It's, for me, it makes so much sense. I don't carry the overhead, the cost of a render farm, because it's, they can be really, really expensive. The electric bill and the cooling costs alone, that can really eat up budget real fast. And, in this arrangement, I don't carry that with me. And so as a small studio, it's a wonderful solution for me. It works out great. These guys are benefiting. I'm able to, help them make money on their inventory. And for me, it's an enormous asset for, my production and my business.
I love that idea, that expression of a render garden. I'm going to have to use that. Well, look, nice. I really like your work. I like your work for all the wrong reasons, I'm sure, because I think it's actually just really beautiful, and it's very well lit. It's really engaging. And I guess that's not the wrong reason, because I guess to communicate any story, you need to engage the viewer. And if you can engage me on stuff that is obviously a complete blank piece of paper to me, you've done a really good job. I'd recommend people go and check out your website. Just, you want to give everyone the address?
Yeah, it's www.steffenvfx.com.
And there's obviously ways to get you there. I think actually, if I'm not mistaken, you guys also just are on Twitter now. Is that right?
Yeah, we're on Twitter, and SteffenVFX.
So that's a good way for people to get hold of you and see what you're up to. And look, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, Mike, it's such a pleasure. You know, you guys are just really, I mean, the entire visual effects community has benefited from what you all are doing, and I'm just an enormous fan of what you all do.
Well, it's very kind of you. Thanks.
No, thank you. I've learned so much, and, you know, you guys are, you have benefited an entire industry, and it's just a small group of people. You know, that's great.
Well, we all enjoy it, and I know you do, and it's not really hard work. but thanks again so much.
Mike, thank you very much.
I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. I find it a fascinating part of the industry, and it really is an interesting segment, not just for the medical and pharmaceutical firms, but also for the entertainment industry in general. If you'd like to know more about Casey's company, you can visit them on the web at stefanvfx.com. That's STEFFENVFX.com. That's it for this week. As always, for my partners Mike Seymour and Jeff Hughes, I appreciate you taking the time to listen. And we'll see you next time here on the FX Podcast.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by clicking the Contact Us link at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright FX Guide, LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.